There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hi there.
We have a big show tomorrow. Tomorrow's episode, live on tape from the Jericho Cruise. I got a chance to sit down with our friend Nikki Folsom. She is an author, researcher, and paranormal investigator. She is the author of the book, The Haunted Harlequin Theater, and she's working on a book on shadow people, one on fairies. So we kind of mishmashed, and then we had audience members come up and share some stories with us. There was a lot of love in the audience for you, Tim. A lot of people wondering how you're doing and where were you? I told them that you were being dragged along behind us in the small dinghy and they'd have to go out and look for you. And
I was shark chum.
Yeah, we were chumming the water with Tim. Uh-huh. But we had a lot of good things. I got to tell you, though, dude, we got love from one of the most unexpected sources. Are you ready for this?
Unexpected sources?
Yes.
Okay.
So the first day aboard the Jericho Cruise, mm-hmm. you know, we go into our little artist lounge and I'm greeted with a huge smile from this very rock star looking guy. And he stands up and he goes, "Are you Dave Schrader?" And I said, "I am." And he said, "I'm Perry Richardson from Striper." He goes, "I love your show. Where's Tim?" So Striper, Perry Richardson, who is actually one of the founding members of Firehouse, is yeah. now the bassist in Striper.
Yeah.
And he's a big fan. And it was just like totally not what I was expecting to see. And it was great because it happened right in front of our manager, Barry. So that's always a nice plug when, you know, a real celebrity actually recognizes you. Perry's been listening for over 10 years. And
why aren't the rest of them real celebrities? Why is it only Perry's a real celebrity?
I meant me.
Oh,
I meant me.
Okay. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
When you're recognized by an actual celebrity. So that was that's what I meant. It was just nice. And he introduced me to the other band members at Striper, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, this is the guy you were telling us about, the show you listen to all the time." He's like, "Yeah." And they were very kind, very, very nice people. And it's just weird to see a heavy metal band that's Christian rock, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just like when you see him on stage, you know, it's like Poison and Warrant and any of the bands of that era, that look, that vibe, that just hard driving guitar and banging drums. The Sweet Brothers were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
But during their show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing this big live concert. They've got all these, you know, like 700-800 people on deck watching the show. And the lead singer points out Jericho and he's like, "Hey, Chris, thanks so much for having us on the ship, you know, and being a part of this and being such a longtime fan," and makes all these great comments. And then Perry steps up to the microphone and goes, "And Chris, let me thank you for bringing this guy on the ship, Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio, the best in paranormal." I'm like, holy shit, we just got acknowledged during a rock show. I just thought that was really a fun little moment aboard the ship.
That is, yeah.
That there was much love sent your way from listeners and celebrities alike. So I wanted to make sure that you knew that.
That's really cool. Yeah, I've listened to quite a bit of Striper myself, even in high school. Actually, it's kind of embarrassing that I say that, go that far back, high school and college.
Yeah, but they kicked off in 84 and a couple of my friends that were on board the ship, we all ended up getting matching Striper shirts. So we totally nerded out for the rest of the weekend and got to hang out with Perry and talk. And Perry's really into the supernatural. Actually showed me a photograph that was taken. And there's a ghost girl or a ghost woman in this picture. It's really crazy.
Really?
Yeah. So he said, if I'm ever out his way, let him know he'd like to join us on a ghost hunt. So I might be doing that. We'll have to see. But it was just, it was a fun time again. Great to meet all of you that were out there. And this show we're recording today, Wednesday. We recorded tomorrow's show while I was on the ship. So that will air tomorrow. You'll get a chance to hear that and hear some of the fun. But Perry came to the Live Darkness Radio, came out to my campfire tales. And I got to tell you, that was funny, too. You never know how you're going to be received at these events, right? And this being the third event, I'm not sure, you know, what kind of turnout are we going to get? You know, it's ghost stories. And I've brought, you know, a ton of new ghost stories to do. And they set up this great elaborate campfire area in the back of the ship with this fake blowing campfire and everything. It's really great. And Perry came and sat in the front row. Chris Jericho and his family came in and sat and watched the show. And I'm performing to this whole big crowd. And at one point I turned to my right and realized that the whole area I thought was blocked off with just seats and tables has filled up with people all the way to the other side. So I had to stop the show and acknowledge them as well. And I didn't realize, but man, we packed that joint. So thank you very much for the love and support for the paranormal. And, you know, you're on a rock and wrestling rager cruise. And, you know, there were other options. There were great bands and comedians and things going on. And I got to guess a couple hundred people showed up just to listen to ghost stories. So that's always very rewarding in itself. So I just wanted to thank all of you. And hopefully we picked up a bunch of new listeners. A lot of people just came to hear the ghost stories, didn't even know that Darkness Radio was a show, and ended up telling us they were going to be listening to the show. So if you're tuning in, congratulations. You're now part of the Army of Darkness Radio, and welcome to it. We appreciate you guys being here. Good times had by all. We've got a lot of news to cover today. A lot of news, and we've got some emails to dive into. First off, though, Tim, we've got an interesting article from MSN, and this is actually our first audio daily double exploring the science behind paranormal activity and ghost hunting. One of the few professional skeptics out there I enjoy talking to, Ben Radford, is part of this interview, and we'll go to that now.
Well, we wanted to introduce you to Ben Radford, an expert on ghost hunting and published award-winning author on this very topic. Thanks so much for joining us, Ben.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, Ben, some of us don't quite know what to do with the concept of ghost hunting or paranormal activity, but you take kind of a scientific approach. Can you talk to us about some of the research that went into your book?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because what people think of as ghost hunting is actually sort of a collection of a bunch of different things. In some cases, it's folklore and what we call legend tripping, right? So this is where, you know, your buddies go out there looking for a cemetery or a haunted house or something, and they're going around taking a bunch of photos and trying to basically reenact a pre-existing legend or story. But it's interesting because when you look at the science behind it, there's actually interesting psychological reasons why people see ghosts. In fact, there's even some meteorological reasons, including the weather.
Well, that's pretty good. We've heard from other ghost hunters in the past who have said that there is a weather connection. So what is your take on this?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first thing you have to realize is that what people report as ghost activity is actually nothing like you see on TV and in horror films. I mean, that's the dramatic, sensationalized, you know, scary things jumping out of closet type stuff. In reality, when you talk to people who experience ghosts, they're reporting things that are very, very mundane. It's a weird feeling. It's a sound. It's a strange smell. It's a something seen out of the corner of their eye. And so in the real world of real ghost experiences, that is, people are reporting a wide variety of perfectly ordinary things. And some of them can be mimicked by wind, whistling sounds, for example. Of course, when you have a change in air pressure, that can move objects and doors, windows, and things like that. So basically, within the context of a haunting, when people assume or believe that there's a reason why anything weird might be a ghost, that's when they'll interpret those things as ghosts, even if they're not.
Well, I like that answer. It could have gone more horrifyingly, depending on how you... So I'll be able to sleep tonight. This is good. Now, do some ghost hunters use infrared thermometers or any other tools to measure weather-related variables to sense the paranormal?
Yeah, and this is where the problem comes in, right? Is the tools that these ghost hunters use, they're science-based tools, right? They actually do measure heat. They actually do measure electromagnetic fields and things like that. The problem is that there's no proven known connection between ghosts and these readings. And so, you know, a lot of times these ghost hunters will go around, you know, like, oh, it's beeping and, you know, it's making sounds and it's lighting up. It's very impressive to audiences on TV. But in real life, scientists are rolling their eyes saying, well, this is all well and good, but what's the connection to ghosts? And so this is part of the problem, right? When you have such a widely held belief about ghosts, you know, people all around the world believe in ghosts. They think about ghosts. Sometimes they experience ghosts. But then when you try to prove it, right, when you try to bring science to it, a lot of it just sort of falls apart and you're left with stories and legends.
Okay, very interesting. So where do you personally stand on some of this? Is that a question you're comfortable answering? I know that you've written on the topic and people have strong opinions on this.
Yeah. And look, I mean, belief in ghosts is universal. People all around the world believe in some form of this. And partly it's because it's connected to belief in the afterlife and belief in reincarnation, talking to the dead and things like that. So that's one reason why so many people around the world, depending on which poll and survey, you know, half of people believe in ghosts, and many of them believe it because they had some personal experience. So, you know, in my experience, I haven't found good scientific evidence for ghosts. That doesn't mean I don't get creeped out if I'm, you know, in some spooky place late at night, because I'm human, right? And like everybody else, I'm wondering what's going on behind me in the dark.
That's a good answer. All right. Well, where can people find your book?
So I've written a couple books. My most recent one is called Investigating Ghosts, The Scientific Search for Spirits, and it's available at better bookstores everywhere, of course, also online. And it's basically a historical, science-based, and cultural and folkloric look at the search for ghosts over time.
Okay, and some of the other writing that you've done in the past leading up to the most recent one, what else have you written about?
I wrote several books. I wrote a book called Bad Clowns. You remember, speaking of Halloween and scary things, you may remember a few years back, there was a clown panic. It was right around this time, in 2015, 2016, when people were reporting evil and scary clowns menacing kids at school. There were actually school lockdowns across the country. And I wrote a book about that titled Bad Clowns. I did a book on mysterious New Mexico, which is in my home state of New Mexico. There's lots of weird things here in the state, miracles and monsters and legends. So I love that sort of stuff. And especially for Halloween, right? I mean, Halloween is when folklorists are busy. Our phones ringing off the hook because everyone wants to know about, you know, Halloween and, you know, and urban legends about, you know, scary candy lore and things like that. And it's a fun time to educate the public about history and culture and folklore.
Well, Ben, what's next for you?
So actually, early next year, I have a book titled America the Fearful coming out. And it's actually about how fear is used in modern American society by politicians, journalists, and others to basically scare people into doing what they want. So that's coming up next.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a very interesting and fascinating book, too. A topic that's pretty relevant. Ben, thank you so much. Expert on ghost hunting, the world of the psychological as well, a little bit of everything. Award-winning author. Thank you so much, Ben.
You could tell that the interviewer was hoping that interview was going to go a different way. He was looking for ghost stories and ghost tales, not Ben to come on and tell him, yeah, that probably doesn't really work like that. And there's no scientific proof of this. And so the guy's like, okay, well, so what else have you got for us, Ben? I hope he doesn't bring him back on to talk about Santa, because he's not going to be happy with that answer either.
Yeah.
So but interesting nonetheless. Like I said at the beginning, Ben's one of the quote unquote big skeptics out there I like talking to. He's always respectful and has an interesting and intelligent dialogue about it, as opposed to a few of the other outspoken skeptics who are just, I guess bully is the best term I can use, and I don't mean that as in schoolyard, but when you try to make a point and all they do is yell over the top of you and tell you you're wrong and stupid, that's not conducive for an open dialogue or conversation. And there are quite a few of the well-known quote-unquote skeptics out there who do nothing more than just try to override you when you have a conversation. And you could hear throughout, I thought it was interesting that he considers himself now a folklorist instead of, yes, I'm a skeptic.
Maybe that's a new term. You know, he's trying to introduce a new vernacular to the field. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty cool. So that I thought was an interesting way to kick off. And, you know, Ben is right. There are no pieces of equipment that are scientifically proven to communicate with the dead. But what we can realize is that some of these pieces of equipment that were actually created to find studs in walls and electric wiring and can read high levels of electronic magnetic force and fields, that if there is something there, outside influence, and it's connecting and beeping in response to questions and no other time, it becomes a tool, right? It's finding another way to utilize pieces of equipment that already exist for other methods. So there is some interesting stuff. And I'll tell you, where I'm stationed and filming this new TV series, I'd love to take Ben Radford around, because I don't know how you explain the shit that's going on here. Plain and simple. It's insane, the amount of activity in this place and what we've been recording and seeing and visually capturing. We've caught some photographs this season that are staggering. So for people that are just tuning in and don't know, I did two seasons of a TV show called The Holzer Files, a paranormal investigative show on Discovery Plus and Travel Channel. And for those of you around the world, I guess Discovery Plus is now becoming more available, so you can check that out. I'm filming a new series with Cindy Kaza, the medium, from that same show, Holzer Files. The two of us are off with Katie Stafford, working as our kind of paranormal madman. He builds a lot of the equipment that we're using. He's our in-house mad scientist, and we've been having some ridiculous connections to the other side. I can't give any more information about that till the show's ready to air. I can't tell you where it's taking place, anything like that, but it's pretty cool. So keep tuned and we'll keep you guys up to date on what's going on with all of that. But some of these places, man, you can't, scientifically, how can you prove something? Because if a spirit doesn't want to interact, it doesn't interact. Sure. Right? It's sure. Not like they're going to say, oh, well, science is here. Come on, guys, let's go out and show them what we can do. A ghost hunting couple who won the national lottery have used their winnings, Tim, in the way that I think you and I probably would, should we ever win a national lottery.
McRib?
That, of course. They're visiting one of the UK's most haunted locations. Laura Hoyle, 39, and Kirk Stevens, 37, from Nottingham, have been ghost hunters for years and said the visit to Nottingham's Museum of Justice was a dream come true. Formerly a courtroom, prison, and police station, the Museum of Justice was voted the most haunted site in the UK by the TV program Most Haunted. Mr. Stevens said it was a dream come true. We would never have been able to enjoy an event like this before the win. Ask any paranormal investigator what their dream is, and they'd say good equipment and have access areas to a venue like the Justice Museum. The couple, Tim, won the Set for Life drawing, meaning that they're going to receive $10,000 every month for the next 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and that happened on March 1st this year. However, it was not until nearly 2 weeks later that they actually realized they won. So psychic ability is not part of their lexicon, apparently.
No.
When they did find out that they won, though, Ms. Hoyle immediately finished her work at a logistics firm and walked out. She said, I was physically shaking as I told the lady, I think I've won the lottery. It's so weird saying those words. So I think it's cool, and I think it's also a little sad that they live in Nottingham and couldn't afford to go to the Nottingham Museum of Justice before this win. It's not like they went to, you know, Ireland or Scotland or Italy or Australia, someplace a little further away. It's right in their own backyard, and they were just excited to finally get that access.
So, wait, it's $10,000 a month?
Yeah, for 30 years.
Hmm.
That's pretty cool.
It is. Is it Now, let me ask you this. I mean,
I just read the article to you, man. I know nothing more than that.
No, I get what you're saying, but that's 120,000 a year.
Yeah, well, for people that couldn't afford to go to a museum in their own
right.
town.
No, I mean, that's like a lot of money. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of money. Yeah. But is it
quit your job kind of money?
Right, right. that's I'm sitting here. I'm thinking, oh, okay. Yeah, they won the lottery. They're set for life. And then you said $10,000 a month. And I went, maybe that's like part-time pursue your passion type of money. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, well, right. That's what you and water. I would think.
Yeah.
But to them, if they're if they're a couple that doesn't have children, mm-hmm. and you know have been working their whole life, maybe this is just the point. They're like, we don't need to do this. We don't need to kick and scratch to make ends meet. Now we've got enough money every month to get through, and it's guaranteed for 30 years.
And so, they're in England, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they take up to 50% in taxes.
Well, I don't. Maybe this is what they get paid after. The taxes. I don't know. Again,
I hope
a lot
so.
Of questions left out there. Very strange. Huh. Very strange. We do have a Black Eyed Kid style story coming up in a few minutes from one of our listeners. But next up on the docket here, we have an article from Q98.5, Rockford's number one home for new country, Tim. An unusual event reported at an Illinois haunted house that sits inside an old school. Now, according to this article, it says haunted houses don't scare me per se. Want to know what does? Actual haunted buildings. Recently, I DJ'd a wedding reception inside this building in Freeport, Illinois, Masonic Events Center. The Masons are up to something, Tim. Every Masonic hall is haunted.
It's probably just dinner.
Upon the arrival, the marquee on the corner read ghost tours. And then there was a phone number. The building was empty except for a man in an old shirt and pant combo wearing an apron who let me in the back and then disappeared. Literally. I didn't see him the rest of the time I was there. Having a few minutes of downtime, I did some Googling of the building and the haunted aspect. Yep. Lots of stories of reported paranormal activity. Yay. That's what he puts in his article.
Oh, God.
Some might agree the only thing worse than a building with paranormal activity is a haunted house set inside a place with paranormal activity. This is the exact scenario for an old school in Herrin, Illinois. One of the actors from Chittyville Haunted, I had to say that very carefully.
Okay.
Chittyville Haunted House shared his thoughts on the building's alleged haunting. In the Facebook post, he said, there are many fabricated stories, but there are also real accounts of paranormal activity. One specifically, he witnessed firsthand. I took a scared friend of mine through during off time last year to show him there's nothing to be afraid of. Motion sensors started going off with no explanations. And then came the footsteps from across the room. But there was no one there. He went further and spoke of a spirit who apparently responds to her name, Lucy. He explained other workers at the haunted house would jokingly yell, Lucy! That is until many of them experienced mysterious scratches and bruises. I'm going to read that line again and say it the way I think it was meant to be said.
Sure, sure.
He explained other workers at the haunted house would jokingly yell out, Lucy! More like Ricky Ricardo, I think, is what they were going for.
Right.
If one chose to follow the girl, she would simply disappear into a corner with no exits, including no known door traps. The sounds of children laughing and running through the building have been heard repeatedly. Props in the haunted house would have spooky errors or move without explanation. What's a spooky error?
That would be like Bill Buckner when he went to get that ball and it went between his legs. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, Billy Buckner from Boston. Good God.
Yeah, that's a spooky era. Yeah.
Yeah, that certainly was. I sometimes tell friends of mine that the actors are more scared of the school than the customers are. They just laugh it off and think I'm joking, but I'm not. Chittyville Haunted House also has escape rooms. It's a hard no for me, but if you're interested, you can learn more. That's what this article goes on to say. This article will be up on our website at darknessradio.com under the news tab, as will all of the news articles I'm talking about. And if you continue to scroll down, there's this headline on the same story, 10 Illinois ghost tours that are guaranteed to scare your pants off. So you can find out about those and more. So make sure you go check out the website, darknessradio.com. Click on those news tabs to keep up to date.
Probably good, because sometimes I need help getting my pants off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, don't we all?
Yeah.
Don't we all? Tim, there are eerie tales and stories of paranormal activity at Stone's Public House in Ashland. That was a great addition. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that.
Joe Magnani had been on the Ashland Police Force for about 5 years before he saw his first ghost. It was the mid-1980s, and Magnani and his partner, Steve Zanella, were called to check out Stone's Public House in the middle of the night. A door had been left open in the back of the restaurant and bar. All seemed fine on the first floor, but Magnani, now chairman of the select board, and his partner had an eerie feeling as they went up the stairs. They heard some unusual sounds, but attributed it to the age of the building, which opened as a hotel back in 1832, 3 years after we started Darkness Radio, Tim. They went to the top floor, where rooms once rented to guests had been shuttered for decades. We opened up one of the doors, and Steve jumped back, Magnani said. I asked Steve, what's wrong? He goes, you don't see her? I said, see who? The figure Zanella is presumed to have seen was that of 11-year-old Mary Smith, who had been killed by a train that roared past the inn back in 1863. The dress she is believed to have worn is framed and hanging at the restaurant. That's dark. That's really dark, Tim.
Yeah.
As they exited the building that night, Magnani looked from the parking lot to one of the windows. Sure enough, I see a silhouette of a young girl in the window, he said. I said, Steve, there she is. You talk to enough people in town and you'll hear a number of tales like Magnani's. Lights turning on and off, doors opening, glasses breaking, voices coming from people who are just not there. Originally, an inn called the Railroad House, the building was put up by businessman John Stone back in 1832 in response to the railroad going through what was then Unionville. A farmer and former militia captain, Stone owned much of the land that made up Unionville. The story of Mary Smith isn't the only ghoulish yarn associated with the tavern, though. On the restaurant's website, a news article describes how a number of psychics and mystics visited the building for clues and ideas as to what may be going on there throughout the years. Now, according to the restaurant's website, experts concluded that more than one spirit calls this restaurant home. One man, Bert Richard, not to be confused with Richard Burton, Tim, two totally different guys.
Right.
Bert Richard died there, but his spirit likes the atmosphere and just will not leave. Perhaps the more widely known story, rather, legend, I guess, is one involving Stone and a resident at the hotel that Stone is said to have killed after accusing the man of cheating at a card game in which Stone lost $3,000 in 1832, Tim. $3,000. That had to be like $1 million.
I don't know if it'd be that much.
But I don't know. 1832. Think about that. 1832. It was said he had help from six men to bury the victim in the basement, Tim. Now, the story is based on the spiritual reading of Ralph Bibbo, a professional hypnotist and founder of the education concerning a higher order. He visited the inn in the mid-1980s. Cliff Wilson, president of the Ashland Historical Society, said that such a story is just a bunch of baloney. Well, let me say it in the voice. I'm sure he actually said it in, Tim.
Sure.
Cliff Wilson, president of the Ashland Historical Society, said that story is a bunch of baloney. And it's not based on any real evidence. I feel that delivery made it sell it a little bit better. For starters, while Stone built and owned the building, he didn't manage it, Wilson said, and Stone, a practicing Baptist, wouldn't have likely engaged in a game of cards. He wouldn't have done it, Wilson said. Never mind gambling, just playing cards. That would have been bad. He also said that they came up with a bunch of names to go along with the story, and historical records don't show those people ever existed. That said, Wilson wouldn't discount unusual happenings at the restaurant. He said he experienced something of a paranormal nature about a decade ago. He was at the restaurant's bar interviewing a man who had come to town and planned to write a book about the Stone House. Wilson spoke with the man for 2 hours and had a recorder with him to review the interview later. When he went to listen to the recording later that night at home, the audio was almost impossible to understand. Bar chatter could be heard, but not the two men speaking. But at one point in the recording, one can hear someone clearly say, "Titty ran." He didn't make it. Titty ran. T-I-D-D-Y.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A Daily News reporter listened to the recording and can confirm the noise. Wilson said he didn't remember anyone grabbing the recording and saying those words. He did some research and found out that there was a man in town named George Gordon Tidsbury, who was a deputy marshal. But Wilson said he couldn't find anything about him running for or from anything. The restaurant has been featured on popular paranormal television shows, including Discovery Channel's Ghost Lab. Manager Brian Grimes said the restaurant's alleged paranormal activity has attracted customers far and wide. The business used to have a book filled with stories about alleged ghosts who would roam the restaurant, but they stopped doing that, however, since the start of the pandemic. Like a couple of weeks ago, we had people here who had friends from out of town. As soon as they came in here, one of the first things they were asking about is, "Can we see the attic?" Grimes said a good portion of the building is off limits to customers, but they show as much as they can. Matthew Shapiro, a restaurant worker, said he's seen some paranormal stuff. One morning, when they were opening, they said they found fingerprints of a little girl on a mirror on the second floor. How do you know they're little girl's fingerprints? Maybe it's a little boy with just very petite hands.
Well, that could be, yeah.
It was much too high for a child to reach, he said. Sometimes we would come in here from a night where no one was here and then come in the next day and there were baby handprints all over the mirror. That's probably the creepiest thing I've ever seen, he went on to say. Creepy handprints, Tim. Creepy handprints!
That's disturbing. I did find an inflation calendar online.
Okay. All right. So $3,000 in 1832
to 2021 would actually equivalent to the spending power is equivalent to $95,689.53.
Yeah, almost $1 million. I was so close.
You were less close than
hey, you know what? Yeah. I'll take it. Hand grenades and horseshoes.
Well, yeah, I'm not close. I'm not going to turn down $95,000.
No, get me wrong. Not at all.
And $95,689.53. Don't short me my 53 cents, my friend.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a night stay and a hooker.
That's
back
right.
Back in 1832.
That is right.
Hi guys. This is how this email begins. I hope you're well, and I hope that it's okay to email you. No, we hate those.
Yeah, I can't stand emails.
I had a dream that I cannot explain, and it's really bothering me. I'd never heard of black-eyed kids until I had this dream and looked it up. First, let me start by saying that I've been struggling with nightmares for years, but this particular one really shook me. I'm a grown woman, and I won't even look out of the house windows or walk out to my car by myself at night anymore. In my dream, I was awoken by the sound of kids laughing and playing outside. I followed the noise out of my bedroom and to the window next to the front door. I peeked out the curtains and there were two kids standing behind my car that was parked in the driveway. An overwhelming sense of fear came over me, like I immediately knew they were not good. I blinked for a second, then opened my eyes to get a closer look. When I opened my eyes, the two children were on the other side of the window, right in front of me. The boy was older, but the girl much smaller. Their heads were down. I was asking myself why a little girl had all gray hair. Just as that crossed my mind, the kids looked up at me, and the girl said, "Don't worry, we're just kids. Can we come in?" My fear intensified. I was absolutely terrified. That's when I noticed their eyes. Their eyes were completely black. I was speechless. I was thinking, no, but I couldn't get the words out. I ran from the window back to my bedroom to wake up my boyfriend and grab the Bible that sits next to my bed. The kids were banging on the window during this time, and the girl was yelling that they just needed to call their mom. When I got back to the window with my boyfriend and Bible, I opened the curtain, and they were gone. They had vanished. I haven't been able to stop researching since. I've read lots of BEK, but it's often that they come to people, but is it often that they come to people in dreams? I'd appreciate your opinion. The people I've told about this dream just brush it off as a nightmare, but this is by far one of the worst nightmares I've ever had. I can't stop thinking about it. I've never remembered a dream so vividly. Thanks. And that comes from Jackie. All right, Jackie, I have not heard really of black-eyed kid dreams before. And the fact that this wasn't even part of your paradigm, you knew nothing of black-eyed kids, that's really strange. But maybe researching and going down that rabbit hole and continuing to poke and prod it is going to just cement your fear even more. And maybe that's what they're hoping for. Maybe it was a way to reach you through the dream realm, scare you. You start researching and looking more into it. And then, I don't know, maybe thought form, tulpa, manifestation, these beings may just be needing a little bit of help coming into our world. There's a nice happy thought for you. What do you think, Tim?
Well, you know, when we first changed over from Darkness Radio to Beyond the Darkness, we had a series of two shows where we examined whether BEK were demonic or whether they were alien. And we had Christina Rake and Carl Johnson on, then we had Whitley Strieber and Jason Offit on. And we were talking about whether there could be one or the other. And in both cases, there's something that connects the two, and that is the possibility that both could enter through the dreamscape to ask permission to get into you. If you think about it, and it doesn't take much to think about this and how they connect, a lot of abductees will talk about how they've been approached in a dream state and then have physical abductions. Some people who have been possessed have talked about having not necessarily like old hag syndrome, but something to the effect of having nightmares with demonic entities, and then it goes from there. So there is a connection between dreams and evil entities. Not that I want to scare you anymore, but if BEK does have something to do with either the demonic or with aliens, the dream world could be a potential in for them to, you know,
get access, right?
Yeah, get access. Yeah.
But on the other side, it could just be a dream. So we don't want to put terror in you, but
that's true.
You know, if you're a religious person, maybe start doing the prayer of Michael the Archangel before bed and clearing yourself and picturing yourself surrounded in white light and whatever kind of holistic versions you want to do to help protect yourself at night.
And I say the St. Michael's prayer every night before bed, and that I actually sleep better. And if you believe that you actually astrally travel when you sleep, it actually, and you ask for protection for your body as you're sleeping and protection for your soul if it travels, and ask for protection on both sides, you actually sleep much deeper and better.
I agree. So consider that. I hope that will bring you some relief. But just if whatever you do, don't give them access. We have an email from an anonymous male in Northwest Georgia. How do I know that? Because he says, I'm an anonymous male in Northwest Georgia.
Ah.
No narrative story here, gentlemen. Just an addition to medical side effects that resemble the paranormal. Earlier this year, I was trying an Adderall prescription. I was also working solo overnights. There were times when I thought I saw humanoid shadows move at the corners of my vision. It was concurrent with a perfect mix of negative circumstances and influences. This was one of the negative side effects, I reported to my doctor, and I insisted we move on and try other ADHD treatments. Still trying to get the right care from the right doctors at the right cost. Thankfully, I rarely work overnights, but I'm worried about chronic understaffing and the upcoming holiday volume. Take care. Well, anonymous male in Northwest Georgia, thank you for weighing in on that. It's a fascinating instance, but it still leaves me with the question, Tim. Are there some medications that leave us more open and prone to seeing or experiencing? Like my experience in my haunted hospital story, mm-hmm. I'm well aware I was on morphine.
Yeah.
But I was seeing things so vivid and clear. Was it taking down the barriers in my subconscious? Was it allowing me to see things or awakening that third eye? I don't know.
See, it very well could be because I myself am on doses of morphine for pain and I don't see anything. So the way it affects you could be different from the way it affects me.
Well, and you've been slowly doing it for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like all in one weekend, right?
No, I know, but I was
dosing.
Right, but I've been in the hospital where I've had a higher dosage of morphine and not had the same effect. So the way it affects different, like, for example, my grandpa Lasker was in the hospital, high dosage of morphine, and all he saw was spiders. Like everywhere, scary, huh? But it affects different people different ways. Some people could say, well, hallucination. Other people would say, well, it opens up the pineal gland. There's different interpretations of what exactly the drug could do for you or do against you. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, very weird. Very weird. But thank you again for the insights, Anonymous in Georgia. Hi, Dave and Tim. I had an experience this week and I thought I'd share. This last Monday or Tuesday morning, I woke up like usual and proceeded to let my dogs out in the backyard. Well, there's the answer, Tim. Yep. Everybody's been wondering who let the dogs out. It was Missy from Minnesota.
That's it.
This was around 6:30 a.m. and the sun wasn't yet up. It was a clear morning and as I was looking up at the stars, I noticed a fast-moving light. It came from the northwest and was moving in a southeasterly direction. It appeared as the same size to me as all the other stars. It wasn't blinking like a plane, and it was moving too quickly to be a plane anyway. As it neared the constellation Orion, I saw a shooting star that appeared to be shooting toward this moving object. Me, in my early morning mindset, thought, whoa! This weird moving object and a shooting star. How lucky. When it disappeared out of my range, I went inside. I looked up the location of the space station. It wasn't near me. I don't think it was a satellite. As I was researching this, it hit me that the shooting star I saw wasn't falling toward Earth. It looked as though it was shooting up into the sky. I'm not sure exactly what it was I was seeing this morning. I thought I'd share that with you and see what your listeners think. Thanks for all the great years of Darkness Radio. That comes from Missy in Minnesota. Well, Missy in Minnesota, contact Minnesota MUFON, M-U-F-O-N. I don't know why I said that so aggressively. MUFON, M-U-F-O-N.
It's a great
Who's
cheer.
Number one? We are. Yeah, try them, Missy. They may have an insight for you as to what's going on and there may have been other reports. So that would be my suggestion. But it's then again, what do I know?
No, it's a good suggestion because with the combination of Jeff Soros's rockets and Elon Musk's rockets, I think it was the one that Musk launched.
That sounds like a great name for a band, Elon Musk's Rockets.
It does, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. The one that Elon Musk launched, what was it, 6 months to a year ago, that was unmanned, had this weird corona off the blast pattern that was amazing, and people mistook it for a UFO, and he had to go on. And really not only put out a press release, but he had to go on social media and explain it. He had to put out a press release and finally had to go in front of the media and say, this wasn't a UFO. Here's a picture of the blast pattern when we ejected certain parts of the rocket to explain that, this thing took up off into the sky. You didn't see an alien. You didn't see a shooting star. You didn't see this, that, and the other. It was our rocket because people were reporting that they thought for sure they saw a UFO. So, yeah, you definitely want to check with MUFON.
You brought up corona.
Yeah.
So I'm on the cruise ship and they're wheeling like boxes of whiskey and booze and stuff. And this guy's got on his shoulder a box, and I turn to him and I tap him on the shoulder, and he looks at me and I go, "Man, I'm really sorry." And he goes, "What's that?" And I said, "I see you have a case of Corona." And he goes, "No, in order to get on the ship, you had to have been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. You had to have taken a recent COVID test, like within the 3 days.
Yep.
And then you had to take an antigen test at the site."
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And he goes, "No, I got tested. I don't have Corona." And I said, "I think the box on your shoulder is telling me differently," because he had a case of Corona on his shoulder. And the two Filipino guys that were pushing the cart, they got it. The one American worker, no clue what I was referring to.
I don't know how.
Unbelievable. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more stories to share right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. All right, friends, the Ireland June super secret trip is coming up, and we are almost sold out. Check this out, Tim. I was approached when we were at Michigan Paracon by a tour company. They do all these great supernatural expeditions.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said, "Hey, I've got an Ireland trip, and our host dropped out. Would you be willing to take it over?" And I said, "Sure." She goes, "We only had 6 people that had signed up for it. 4 of which were this guy's friends, but he can't do it." And I said, "Sure." So she signs me up. I make 1 post on Facebook. We sold out in 30 hours. 1 post. That's all it took. We had so many people interested that we opened up a second super secret trip that we have not made available on social media at all. It's only been through mentions here on Darkness Radio. 30 spots open. We have 5 spots left. That's it. So I'm going to go live with this November 1st on social media. Those 5 spots are going to fill up. If you're interested in going to Ireland with me and you'd like to investigate haunted castles, crypts, hotels, and more, then make sure that you sign up. It's going to be an amazing time. This is going to be coming up in June of 2022. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Tell me that you want the Ireland trip for June. I will connect you with our tour coordinator. She'll send you the links and you can make monthly payments in order to obtain the cruise and be a part of that. If you have written to me in the past and nobody's gotten back to you, please write to me again and say, "Dave, I'm still interested, but I never heard back from anybody," or check your spam folder. All right. So check your spam folder first. And then if you still don't have an answer, write to me. I will personally connect you with the coordinator and we will get you signed up for that trip. Only 5 spots remain. It's going to sell out, I think, before I even get a chance to drop it on social media on November 1st. So if you'd like to join me in Ireland, email me right now, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll forward the information on to Maria. She'll contact you with how to sign up and get you going. We also have the Las Vegas Para Unity Conference coming up December 9th through the 11th at the MGM Grand Convention Center. There are tickets still available. If you're interested in coming to the biggest paranormal conference this year, it's going to be huge and a great time out in Las Vegas. Then all you have to do is go to darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. You'll see all the locations you can see me in the next upcoming couple of months and into 2022. There's the Wicked Salem Tour cruise that we're going to be doing in November of 2022. There's Michigan Paracon I just got signed on for. There's a lot of cool events that are going to be coming up soon. So make sure that you go check out darknessevents.com. in order to, catch up with us and see what's going on. Now, Tim, Timothy, a few weeks back, I talked about the fact that I'm on Cameo and I'm available to do messages, happy birthday wishes, happy Halloween, happy Christmas, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Happy Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. I will do these messages for you, personalize them, have some fun with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Cameo, cameo.com, cameo.com. Just look up Dave Schrader, S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R. You can book me for that. we told everybody you're going to be on Cameo. People are wondering why you're not on Cameo yet.
There's nobody wondering. Nobody emailed me.
No, people email me. They want to know when is Tim going live on Cameo.
I haven't seen one email, one message, one nothing. Yeah.
Because I didn't tell them to email you. I told them that you're going to be on Cameo. That's where they're going to contact you to get the Cameo. So you got to go set it up, Tim, because people are asking, when are you going to be on Cameo? So go get on Cameo.
These mysterious people never emailed me or anything. So, yeah.
Again, they're not supposed to email you. You sign up your account at Cameo, Tim. Then they go book you on the Cameo website.
Sure.
That's how that happens.
I see.
All right, I guess, folks, Tim just doesn't want to communicate with you. He's not going to make himself available on Cameo. Yeah. So don't write to me anymore. I can't push him. I've given him all the tools to be on Cameo. I've told him you guys want him on Cameo. He refuses to sign up. So
it's not that I refuse. It's just, you know.
Well, it costs you nothing, Tim, to sign up. And then audience members have access to you and private messages. Or I could just give your phone number out and they could call you directly if that's easier.
No, that's fine. They can email me. It evidently it's working so well that they have refused to email me so far. But
I don't know if you're misunderstanding the English language, but that's not how it works. They go to the website Cameo to book you. Right. They don't email you to book you on Cameo. Nobody, you have to be on Cameo for them to book you.
Nobody has said, "Hey, how come you're not on Cameo yet?" by emailing me. So I see the demand is so overwhelming that.
All righty then. Well, there you have it, folks. Email Tim at darknessradio.com. Stop bothering me with it because he's too bullheaded to go do it himself. We have a new email story here. Ghostbusters, a woman captures a ghostly figure in an eerie photo taken at a haunted castle and says there's no explanation for this ghoulish figure. An Irish woman managed to capture a bizarre ghost figure on a camera at Lep Castle. The sighting occurred back in August when Carrie O'Brien attended a paranormal evening with a professional group of investigators. Describing the night the picture was taken, Carrie told the Irish Mirror, "Our first investigation was in Lep Castle back in August. It was the Paranormal Adventures Ireland that actually ran that night. They invited us down with another group called Soul Sisters. At the beginning, we all met up in the common area of the castle and made a plan for the night because there are two different rooms that you can go to. The first room was the gallery room, but there wasn't really much in terms of evidence or anything happening that night. So we took a break and went out to the chapel. We were doing EVP, that's electronic voice phenomena work, and most of which was just talking to yourself. But then when we were quiet in the room, we could hear conversations below us. But we knew nobody else was there, so we thought, right, that's interesting. Then I took out the camera and started taking pictures. And then when we went back downstairs, I was going through them, and I thought, well, what's that? After studying the picture, the group tried everything to debunk the idea of it being a ghost, said Carrie. I wouldn't usually look at something like this immediately and say it's a ghost. You try and debunk it in every way you can before you say that. And even then, I don't call it a ghost because you can't know for sure. You just think, wow, that's interesting. Explaining how the group tried to come up with an explanation for the photo, Carrie said, first off, we went around to everyone and got them to show us exactly what they were wearing and what shoes they were wearing in case it was one of the other people in the group. We just couldn't explain it. Then we tried recreating it and everything, and we just can't explain it. The ground is also small stones. So if somebody in the group has been walking around at the time of the photo, we would have heard it as well, but there's no noise, nothing. She says that over the years, she's managed to catch voices on record, but never anything when it came to actual photographic evidence. You might get the odd orb or the usual shadows, but I've never caught anything like this before. Carrie, along with her fiance and two sisters-in-law, now run a paranormal group called the Spooks, and are hoping to head back to Lep Castle in January 2022 to see what more they can find. So we do have images of this. It is a weird-looking specter. I don't know what the hell it is. Again, it's always weird to get one picture and be asked to kind of analyze it, but it certainly looks like some kind of spectral being. So we'll have that up at darknessradio.com. All you need to do is click on that that little link there for news, and you'll find all these news stories. Kesha's in the news, Tim. Kesha is going to explore the supernatural in Conjuring Kesha, a new Discovery Plus series. You'll be able to find it on the streamers Paranormal and The Unexplained Hub on Discovery Plus. Kesha is indulging her Jones for all things paranormal and unexplained in the upcoming Discovery Plus series Conjuring Kesha. The Grammy-nominated singer and ceaseless seeker is executive producing the hour-long six-part series, which a release promises will also document her exploration in a cinematic, hands-on paranormal way. Slated to debut on Discovery Plus streamer sometime next year, the tentatively titled show will manifest on the streamer's Paranormal and Unexplained Hub as it follows Kesha while she ticks off things on her paranormal creepy bucket list by delving deeper into the unknown with celebrity guests and experts in the supernatural. Over the course of my life, I've always been drawn to the supernatural and the spiritual realm, the singer said in a statement announcing the show. Making music, I've felt, was a cosmic connection between my soul and something bigger than me that I couldn't explain. But on the new show, I'll bring along my friends to some of the most mysterious paranormal hotspots to explore them with me. We'll explore life's great mysteries and aim to catch something never before caught on camera. My hope is to show that supernatural isn't just a thing of myths and fables. We're embarking on a spiritual and cosmic exploration. Come with me to experience it all. Kesha and her friends will travel to mind-blowing locations in search of answers to the unanswerable. With Matthew Butler, general manager, Travel Channel and Paranormal Streaming Content, saying, "We are huge fans of Kesha's Supernatural podcast, and we're excited to partner with her to turn her love of all things unexplained into a new series. We know her natural inquisitive nature and sense of adventure will radiate off the screen, and we can't wait to see her and her famous friends in action." In an Instagram post supporting the announcement, Kesha added, "I'm so beyond excited. I want to see things that I can't explain. I'm looking at you, universe, to expand my brain and beliefs. I'll be embarking on a very creepy and cosmic journey." So Kesha has a new show in the paranormal. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to live in this field, Tim. When Kesha and Demi Lovato have shows,
yeah,
obviously they're looking for a different demographic than fat old bald white guys with a white goatee.
Well, let me be the first to raise my glass of urine to Kesha and toast her and say congratulations.
She drank pee once, Tim. Who hasn't tried it?
Doesn't matter. I haven't. I haven't. But let me be the first to raise my own glass of urine to Kesha and toast her and say, way to go, girl.
We're time now for our second audio daily double. Would you enroll in a paranormal boot camp? Well, it's a premise behind Celebrity Exorcism, a 2-hour special where stars embark on a creepy adventure through haunted locations. In the special, celebrities Shar Jackson, Jodie Sweetin, and Meta World Peace are given no information except for their initial meeting location. Here's the audio of these three exploring their new series.
Our special on Tubi, Celebrity Exorcism, Jodie Sweetin, Shar Jackson, and Meta World Peace. Thank you for talking with me today.
Thanks for having us.
You know, I am a former local news reporter, so I have always been the one to volunteer for the ghost tours and volunteer for all the crazy things. Which one of you is the enthusiast in the group, and which one of you is more of the skeptic?
So you're Jodie.
Yeah, I was the one that, like, we'd roll up to, like, some really creepy spot and like the jail, and I was like, ooh, do we get to go inside? And, you know, like, I was like all in, and everyone was like, no, that's a step too far. I was like, damn. So yeah, I was definitely the enthusiast for sure.
I was the skeptic. I was the wuss, and I was the skeptic.
And Meta, did you hear anything or see anything that maybe changed your mind?
Well, at the point when I wanted to change my mind was at the beginning. When we got in the middle of it, we were all in, right? We were all supportive of each other, and we just was not going to let anybody quit. But I did sense, you know, some beings saying, "Why are you here? You know, this is not a show. This is my home." Like, it felt like at times they didn't want us there. You know, I kind of got that sense. And if you really give a lot of yourself, you know, and to the experience, you're going to you might connect, you know, experience.
You know what, Meta? I'm a little upset because you didn't tell us that you were getting the get out message. We didn't get you didn't share that with the group.
Yeah, you didn't say anyone. It was like get out. That's yeah.
Get out of in the jail. I that somebody was saying, I don't really want you here. I did get that sense in the far corner.
When you was going down. Yes, yeah, that corner was creepy.
Char, Jody, did you guys have any weird experiences as well?
Oh man, I had some crazy stuff happen. Like, I'm not even gonna say it was all bad because it wasn't. Something really, really beautiful happened as well, but it was definitely some scary stuff going on. And I mean, I got messages too when we were at the place that Matt is talking about, but I did not get the get out message because I would have listened.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a point. I was, you know, like I said, pretty brave and like, let's do it. But there was one point in the house that we were at towards the end that there was something there that did not like anyone being there, for sure. And as brave as I am and as much as I like to push the boundaries, I'm not going to lie, I ran screaming up those stairs in a complete panic, which was both hilarious and terrifying.
And beautiful.
Yeah, like, it really was, yeah.
For me, it was like a proud mama going, oh, my baby knows her limits. Yeah, it was beautiful.
That new series, part of Tubi, T-U-B-I, so make sure you check it out. Here's an interesting story. After colliding with a ghost, a mom's arm is left covered in blood. That's right. After colliding with the ghost, this woman's arm was left covered in blood. During a paranormal investigation, a mother reported she was left with blood streaming down her arm. That's three mentions of the same thing in the first three lines of the story, Tim.
Yeah,
a little redundantly redundant, if you ask me. Mandy Fellows, 47, has been aware of ghosts since she was a youngster, according to the Washington Newsday. She is now the founder of Anubis Paranormal Investigations, and she has even had her own North Welsh witch that accompanies her around. Something wasn't right, and Dad knew it. When I was a child, we lived next to a church in a graveyard, Mandy from Bidston Worrell explained. I used to notice folks walking into the church late at night and didn't think much of it at the time. But then I noticed they weren't dressed the same way we were, and I realized they were spirits. Mandy's crew organizes events in a range of locations, ranging from the abandoned and forgotten to those that have already been repurposed. The money earned at these events is donated to charity, and each investigation is unique, prompting Mandy to issue a caution to everyone who attends. I'm always honest with people, she remarked. Expect it to be nothing like Most Haunted, as that is purely for amusement, because we don't fake it. You won't feel, hear, or see anything because it isn't there. There was someone who wanted to take us to small claims court because they didn't see a ghost, said the narrator. The crew had been hunting for spirits in their stories around the country when the pandemic put an end to their studies. However, the scariest events can occasionally be found a little closer to home. We went to New Brighton Community Center, which used to be a police station. When we arrived, we thought it would be a little flat, Mandy explained. However, it became quite intense. People being pushed, doors being slammed. It wasn't until I went to make a cup of tea that someone told me I had blood all over my arm. I'd been scratched. However, Mandy, who claims to be a medium for the dead, has only had favorable experiences in general. It's difficult to explain how a medium perceives, she remarked. Summary ends, I remark when I say there. What? Did any of that last sentence make any sense?
Not really, no.
It's difficult to explain how a medium perceives, she remarked. Summary ends, I remark when I say there. Well written. Another proof that the world is falling apart and there is no good journalism anymore, Tim. maybe I should say there ain't no good journalism no more.
There you go.
Yep, there we go. Mm-hmm. Proof of it myself. All right. There's a video, a viral video that's been showing up. I heard a lot about this when I was on the Jericho cruise. People asking me and I finally got a chance to see it. And it's pretty fucked up. It's a weird video. This article talks about it. Are ghosts real? That's a question that's sure to divide the room. The sci-fi series Ghost Hunters has turned many non-believers into believers with its eerie footage that seemingly captures paranormal activity. However, despite the fact that the series is led by professionals who are equipped with special devices to detect paranormal activity, not all viewers are convinced of its legitimacy. And some argue that it's staged in order to attract an audience. I love that this Roberto Silman, who wrote this article on October 23rd, is so entwined in the paranormal field that he's referring to the sci-fi series Ghost Hunters, which hasn't been on in 6 years on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, true.
And is now rebooted, and all the series and episodes are available on Discovery Plus and Travel Channel. So again, kind of missing the point there, but they are back. But what happens when someone who isn't in the TV business shares a video of a potential ghost encounter? Recently, a woman posted a clip of security camera footage taken inside her home, and she posted it to TikTok. During the clip, something really peculiar happened to her dog. Is there a logical explanation behind all of this, or was there really a ghost present? So this article will be up. You can go in and check it out. Have you seen this video of the dog's collar being removed?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty weird. TikTok user at ShannyFanTG recently shared a trio of clips to the platform claiming that there is a ghost in her home. In one video, a mask spontaneously falls off a table. Not real dramatic. In another video, a dog gate creeps open without anyone touching it. Again, maybe it wasn't closed that tightly and it just, you know, swung open. So not that impressive. But it isn't until the third video, Tim, that people really began to think her claims were true. And the video's crazy. The now viral video, which has been viewed nearly 9 million times, appears to have been taken from the same home security footage. It shows her living room where there are two dogs, two separate cages, crates, I should say. They're barking wildly at something you can't see, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's unknown what set the dogs off and why they're barking, as no one appears to be there with them. However, they both mysteriously freeze and stop barking at the same time. Then they remain completely silent for about 15 seconds, and you can hear the sound of like footsteps on the floor.
Hmm.
All right. The video says, "Sorry for the obnoxious barking at the beginning, but watch my black dog." Out of nowhere, one of her dogs appears to jump backwards as if it's being pulled from inside the kennel into the corner. As it's seen jumping, its collar is pulled off its neck.
Hmm.
While it's unknown exactly how the dog's collar came off, many users on TikTok believed her claim there is a ghost. And it is a weird video, man. It is a crazy, weird video. Because they're reacting very aggressively to something. And then they both just stop and they're staring. And then that's when this dog just gets yanked to the back of the kennel. The collar comes off. It's a freaky video. So again, you got to check it out for yourself. Darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab. You'll find it there. Or just go look up ghost removes dog collar. I'm sure you'll find a billion versions of that video available. The May Stringer House owns Florida's most haunted title, Tim. So we're going to Florida of our own volition this time, Tim.
Okay.
The May Stringer House looks like a gingerbread-trimmed Victorian home overlooking the city of Brooksville. And it's reportedly one of Florida's most haunted spots. The backstory, as in most ghost stories, lies in tragedy, with more than 160 years of history in the house. At least 11 different ghosts have been identified by dozens of searchers of the paranormal. In 1855, John L. May built what was then a four-room home on a plantation for his wife, Marina, and their daughters, Matilda and Annie. John died of tuberculosis just 3 years later. Marina remained in the home throughout the Civil War and eventually married a Confederate soldier named Frank Saxon. She died giving birth to the couple's child, a girl named Jessie May, back in 1869. The child then died at the age of three. The house was later owned by Sheldon Stringer, whose family lived there for three generations and expanded it to 14 rooms across four stories. Now, in recent years, researchers have tried to find out more than 50. In recent years, researchers have tried to find out if more than 50 enslaved people who worked the plantation might be buried on the museum grounds in Brooksville. I want to stop there for a quick second.
Okay.
I have a question, and I don't mean this to be ignorant or rude, but I'm curious. You know, when we filmed Holzer Files, mm-hmm. we were no longer allowed to refer to the slaves that worked on the property. They were referred to as enslaved people.
Okay.
Why the change? Is there a different
connotation?
Is there a different, yeah, kind of sense of that from slaves to enslaved people? Neither one of them sound very flattering, so it's not like they're trying to whitewash it, but I don't understand, and I please, you know, if you folks understand why that change has been made, not just your guessing, please email me and let me know. I'm curious what your thoughts are on why it's gone from referring to the slaves of that time as slaves to enslaved people.
I could take a guess, but I don't know for sure. Just that the imagery of slaves and slavery is offensive to some people who are trying to make it more palatable.
Yeah.
That's just my best guess.
I don't know. Unless, you know, actually enslaved people sounds much worse to me.
It does sound worse, but right? Yeah, here's the thing. When you try to make it palatable to all audiences, no matter what, political slant, I'll just put it out there, political slant that you're trying to put on it. I think we spend a lot of time trying to tiptoe around what is actually there. And let's just face it, it was slavery. There were slaves. And if we just call it what it was.
Well, maybe that's the point. Maybe enslaved people does sound worse. Maybe that's what they're trying to do, is slave almost sounds like worker at this point in history. Maybe enslaved people is to rattle cages and make it sound as more dramatic as it truly was, not dismissive, right? Because slave almost has become kind of I don't know what I'm looking for, but it's become kind of a desensitized word to a degree.
It might
enslaved
be, yeah.
people sounds mm-hmm. a lot rougher.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah, so maybe that's more of the aspects. I'm sorry, I know it's a weird.
No, it's not a weird question at all. I'm curious myself because I don't know why you would change the vernacular on that. It just seems odd. Yeah,
and a lot of the homes now are not being referred to as plantations. They're being referred to, I can't remember the proper term they're using on that anymore. It just went out of my head. Damn it. But they're not referring to them as plantations now because they don't want that stigma. But you are what you were. You know, it's not right. That it's a plantation anymore. But most of them are now just being called manor homes instead of plantations because they don't want that dark connotation.
Well, they're trying to escape a past and probably trying to turn a profit. I mean, that's why they don't want that stigma. But you know, like you said, you can't escape your past. You are what you are. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And what, do they become manor employees as opposed to slaves now? Is that what you think is going to PC make it better?
And it won't though. That's the thing. Right. I mean, it's history. It is what it is. You can't escape what it was. And you shouldn't turn a blind eye to what was. I mean, it just wasn't.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we should be more educated about it and realize what it was like. Where I'm located, the history teacher in town I talk to quite often, and he tells me about a lot of the things they do. They take the kids out to this one area that was, you know, kind of for the downtrodden, you know, bordering on the homeless, and make them spend the night there outside. They have to go to a homeless food shelter for the night to eat. Mm-hmm. Then they have to go spend the night outside in a rather cold environment with nothing but cardboard and a piece of tarp, and trying to show people, you know, the kids, to give them respect and understanding and maybe a little compassion.
Yeah.
So I love that. And I think that more should be done like that. Put people out there to show them what it was like and why this was wrong, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, there are reports of Marina May walking around the property and some hearing her daughter cry for her mother. Other ghosts, I believe, are linked to the story of plantation life in Florida. An angry spirit known as Mr. Nasty has also been said to curse at visitors. Restoration volunteers hear footsteps and voices in empty rooms. Workers notice cold spots, mists, and eerie shadows. Museum guides have reported moving shadows, glowing orbs of light, and the sound of a child crying, possibly even little Jessie May. The Atlantic Paranormal Society, better known as TAPS from the sci-fi series Ghost Hunters, and the Florida Ghost Team made several stops there. A three-ring binder at the museum documents some 80 ghost hunting groups that have investigated the house. They love it because they know they're going to get evidence, said the docent Bonnie Letourneau, who said that the house was like Grand Central Station for ghosts. The Hernando Historical Museum Association has used the Most Haunted Crown as a fundraising tool. Its two-hour ghost tours are booked months in advance. Visitors are brought in late at night. All right, listen, folks. Listen to this line, please. If you work for a historic location who has not yet embraced the paranormal and you are starving, you are struggling to keep these historic landmarks afloat, listen to this. The two-hour ghost tours are booked months in advance. Visitors are brought in late at night and given some of the gadgets ghost hunters use to record a presence and are allowed to wander the house. No reservation is needed for Ghost Fest on October 30th, though. The museum decided to have some fun with its reputation by adding an outdoor maze and festival atmosphere. So a lot of these historic, beautiful sites that people are turning away from the history now.
Mm-hmm.
Incorporate the ghosts, tell the story and the history, but use the ghost stories to bring it home. And these places are booked months in advance. That is money in the bank and can help some of these locations survive longer. So I hope that some of these stodgy historic places pull their head out of their ass and start to realize the power and importance of history and ghosts and hauntings and how those stories can tell the history in a much more entertaining and much more insightful way to really sell the history of those locations. And God love them. That can make money and save these locations.
It can. Unfortunately, I think a lot of historical societies are kind of stodgy and a bit too skeptical for their own good.
Right. Well, again, it's not up to your beliefs. If you believe you want to save this place and nothing's working, then it's time to examine a new concept. We're going to go now to another audio daily double. I won't sleep in this house. That's what a Texas home is saying. Paranormal experts are terrified of this place. It's in Mineral Wells near the Baker Hotel, but it's the Haunted Hill House. Let's go ahead and listen to that third and final audio daily double.
If you're driving through Mineral Wells near the Baker Hotel, you'd be wise to follow the signs to stop and do not enter the Haunted Hill House. Experts have called it the most haunted house in the paranormal world.
I won't sleep in this house. I have before in the past, and that's when I was attacked.
Attacked by what?
They're not spirits, they're entities. They're bad things.
Owners Catherine and Eddie Estes aren't the only ones who've been attacked.
A lot of people have been injured physically in this room right here.
Visitors can rent the house and do their own paranormal research, but most people who stay here don't make it through the night.
Something crazy happened and they're like, we need to go ahead and go.
We've had scratches, bite marks, burn marks.
And a lot of it comes from an entity they call Toby.
We can go into Toby's room real quick.
One of the women staying here took this picture. You can clearly see a face they believe is Toby.
And it was one of the creepiest things.
Other guests say they've heard Toby's demonic voice.
It's very quick. Stuff like that.
But what happened downstairs will make your skin crawl.
The most, horrible things have happened in this room. Now watch.
One of the women on the bed started taunting a spirit when all of a sudden something pulled her off the bed.
So we're going to rewind it again.
A year later, that same woman visited the house again. Something scratched her so badly, blood soaked through her shirt. At this point, I wasn't sure I was believing any of this until...
What was that?
Did you hear that?
In the middle of the interview, we heard something scratching. My microphone didn't pick it up very well, but I'm being completely honest when I tell you I heard it clearly.
I just heard like scrap.
And a little later, I heard the same demonic growling many others described. I'm not convinced if it was a ghost, a spirit, or a demon, but I do know I can't explain it. And if you don't believe me, make a reservation. Because I bet you won't make it through the night.
I think you won't make it through the night. It's interesting.
Then very right afterwards, cool. Top of the tater ad. The demonic of dips.
The demonic of dips?
Yeah, I'm just saying. I don't know.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like. All right. Let me see here. Here's an interesting article. I thought this was a kind of a fascinating subject to look at and for them to tackle. The headline is How Hollywood Weaponizes America's Housing Anxiety Through Haunted House Films.
Hmm.
In 2007, the micro-budget ghost story Paranormal Activity used old-fashioned special effects, consumer-grade electronics, and a mundane suburban home to change horror movies for the next 15 years. Arriving just ahead of the housing crisis, Paranormal Activity felt like a throwback. Yet, by the time Paranormal Activity 2 landed 3 years later, its predecessor proved oddly prophetic. In 2008, America's housing bubble burst as dishonest lending practices sent the economy off a cliff and drove many homeowners into the streets. Against the backdrop of an imploding housing market, moviegoers saw their economic anxiety echoed back at them through a surge in haunted house movies that are still going strong. Haunted houses have long been potent metaphors, from the Gothic 19th century to re-examine myths of the New World in the 20th, like titles like The House or The Fall of the House of Usher, The Yellow Wallpaper, Beloved, and The Shining expressed how the sins of the past, like class and gender inequality, colonialism, slavery, and genocide inform and haunt our modern domestic sphere. By the 70s, Gothic mansions and rotting plantations had given way to the most American of aspirations, the freestanding suburban home. Today, these films ask, who owns the home, the family, or the ghosts that stalk the grounds? In 1979, the Amityville Horror added a distinctly American wrinkle to the formula by moving things to the suburbs. Well, they do realize that it's based on a movie. This wasn't just them making a horror movie.
Right, yeah.
The whole point of the house in the suburbs is to have a place to securely and privately raise your home or your family, notes Dr. Jason Zazuga, who taught a class on haunted spaces at the University of Pennsylvania. The security that the house might have provided in the 50s is a much more permeable space now. Privacy and security are things that people either consciously or unconsciously have lots of anxiety about. Amityville and Poltergeist, a few years later, trade depressed Gothic-era governesses for secular former flower children facing the adulthood of homeownership and family rearing that they spent the 60s rebelling against. Audiences likely saw themselves in these characters and recognize this baseline anxiety, setting the stage for supernatural scares. The haunted house story became so prevalent in our culture that selling a known haunted house actually became illegal. The 1990 New York State Supreme Court decision in Stamboski versus Ackley requires sellers to inform public at large about the existence of poltergeists on the premises. Suddenly, the haunted house was not just a genre, but a contract clause. And I want to repeat that, folks. This didn't happen in the 1890s. In 1990, the New York State Supreme Court decision requires sellers to inform publics at large about the existence of ghosts on the, you know, in the home. The housing crisis supercharged the financial aspect of the haunted house through more plots about young couples moving into new homes and dealing with a bunch of angry spirits. Since 2007, the and across six Paranormal Activity films and four Insidious movies and the entire Conjuring universe, haunted house movies showed how little control American homeowners have over their American dream homes. The genre dramatizes the fraught relationship between everyday families and the abstracted unreality of all these financial structures that actually own your home, says Dartmouth English professor Rebecca Clark. It all comes back to what's described as the double meaning of possession, something one owns or something that needs exercising, like a demon. The relationship between homeowners and these amorphous systems, whether financial or spectral, fractured further in 2018, Paranormal Activity 3 crystallizes this notion with a retcon series origin story that pins the hauntings on a Depression-era grandmother who owes a debt to an evil spirit. As Professor Tim Snelson notes in his article, the repossession of the American home, negative equity, gender inequality, and the housing crisis horror story. At a roundtable discussion held on the Paranormal Activity franchise prior to the third's film release, Julia Leda linked the mobility and ethereality of the demon to that of finance capital, specifically in a way in which debt follows families and individuals, Leda continues, just as the demon demands payment of an ancestor's contract. The predatory mortgage allows an outsider to take away the very home and hearth, as generic and characterless as it is. The inescapability of debt remains central to Paranormal Activity 3, but in discovering how the activity began, as the film's poster provokes, we are arguably primed to read the grandmother's pernicious pursuit of financial stability for her family as a resultant of an individual rather than a systemic failing. Audiences were more than happy to get on board with this finance-forward version of The Haunted House, and by 2015, the genre returned to its roots with a remake of a modern haunted house poltergeist and a steady churn of Amityville direct-to-video sequels and spin-offs. Between 2015 and 2021, a stunning 14 Amityville direct-to-video movies were produced. And that doesn't even include the 8 Conjuring Universe movies, which have grossed a combined $2.1 billion to date. Housing anxieties would be all too familiar to viewers inundated with news of financial despair or going through a housing debacle of its own. A 2016 study revealed that 75% of Americans were afraid of losing their houses. Another study that year showed that Americans suffer from a startling lack of emergency funds. The majority don't have the $1,000 to cover an unanticipated expense. And while home buying slightly rebounded during the pandemic, many of these worries remain for the facing eviction as a tenant protections remain in jeopardy. These movies aren't explicitly about housing, but they are the language of the Great Recession to frame their domestic tension. In 2015's Poltergeist, the Bowens buy a house in foreclosure after the family patriarch and breadwinner loses his job at John Deere. Before the move, Eric Bowen, played by Sam Rockwell, was living the American dream with a secure job at an American legacy company, 2.5 kids, and his dream house. After the move, he can't even afford to get his daughter a new iPhone. The setup could not be more on the nose of a horror movie set against the fallout of recession. It's interesting that they say that because talking, you know, when I was doing the Warner Brothers tour and Universal Studios tour, the one thing they brought up was that horror movies do best in times of depression and war.
Yeah, I that doesn't shock me whatsoever.
Right. It connects people to fear even more.
Yeah.
They're already in that headspace.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. Our final story, paranormal investigators, families say a presence of a 7-year-old is in their summer's home. There are many tales of haunted houses, both fictional and non-fictional, stories of ghouls, ghosts, demons, and poltergeists that terrorize homeowners, with intrepid paranormal specialists or exorcists or ghostbusters coming to the rescue. But according to a local paranormal investigator, most ghostly encounters are nothing of the sort. Sometimes, such as with the case of the Lamson family at Sokol Road, the spirits involved are not just friendly, they're family. It was 1990. She was 7, Pamela Lamson said of her daughter, Heather. She had a very rare tumor. It was cancer, and she was very sick. Heather Lamson died January 3rd, 1990. She's buried in West Cemetery in the last available plot there, up the hill from Lamson's colonial home and barn. It would be easy to walk there and visit, she said. It turned out, though, that Lamson wouldn't have to travel at all to visit Heather. Her daughter comes to visit her instead. Maybe it was about a year or so that we noticed different things, she said. I knew she was there. We have a barn, and Heather always liked kids' music. Pamela said she collected wind-up toys that play music and would place them in the barn for her children and grandchildren to play with and listen to. When we played the music, it was like other kids were there, she said. It was a feeling that there were a lot of kids there. I felt like she was there. Years passed on, and then at a presentation in 2018, her son and daughter-in-law, Kevin and Ada Lamson, met David Bray and Chris O'Connor of the Eastern Connecticut Paranormal Society, a statewide paranormal investigative team. O'Connor, the team's medium, said that their mission is to find the truth. When we formed, there were many paranormal teams that were dramatized, sensationalized, he said. He said that their organization isn't like the teams dramatized on television shows and have, in fact, turned down television offers because of requests to act scared or dramatize an event for entertainment purposes. Eli Frund, our research analyst, He'll research everything, and before we go into a house, he will try to do all of the debunking he can or have data ready for us, O'Connor said. Eli will confirm or deny information. O'Connor said the paranormal team has checks and balances to verify any kind of presence, and just because there appears to be an orb on the video doesn't mean there's something spiritual there. Other evidence of manifestation should present itself, such as physical sensation or getting a reading on their electric voice phenomena device. Less than 1% of paranormal cases are malevolent or demonic, he said. Benign spirits, they have a message or have a story to be told. In the case of Heather, it was her time to communicate with her parents. She finally got a medium to do the communication. He said that when he, Kevin, and their team went to visit Kevin and Ada Lamson's home, they didn't know Pamela and her husband Gary were going to be there. On the way there, I got arm pain and I started coughing, O'Connor said. It turned out that once I got there, Pam had a cold. That same day, Gary had fallen and injured his arm. When I first met Heather, I was talking with Kevin O'Connor, and he said, he told him, you have a young girl here. Is it a sister? He said this caused a strong reaction from Ada. It was like you were in a movie, Ada said. It was unreal. It was amazing. O'Connor said while in the barn, Heather showed him the color purple. I asked Pam if she could come over. He said, I already knew her favorite color. The rest of my team didn't. He said that the team used a spirit box, a device that feeds radio frequencies really fast and creates a white noise effect. Spirits came through to speak, and the word purple came out of it. Pam was excited and emotional. I think Pam said, I love you, sweetie. And through the spirit box, we heard, I love you too, mommy, O'Connor said. It was like she was next to you, Ada said. That's how good it was. She was communicating with her mother. First, I was afraid, Pamela said. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Then, when he asked her what her favorite color was, and she said purple, you could hear it very clearly. It was her. It makes me happy to know she's still around. We miss her so much. O'Connor said Heather told him that she'll know when they're present, or that they'll know when she's present in the home when they feel pressure on their face because she's touching their face, or when they go into her bedroom, which has been preserved the way it was when Heather died. And a doll that sits on the chair has tipped over. Pam had left the room the way it was, O'Connor said. I didn't know about the doll being moved. I'm a true believer that our loved ones come to visit us, he said. Going from here on, Pam and her husband know when Heather is here. Heather only visits Kevin when Kevin is at her parents' house. Heather isn't the only spirit, though, that visits the Lamson home. According to the report, the investigative team also made contact with a boy named Josiah, who died in an accident inside the barn while playing. He fell and was impaled on a hay grapple hook. Though there is no historical record of who Josiah was, O'Connor said, he suspects the child lived in the early 19th century. Ada said she and her children have also seen spirits, including one of a farmer who walks around the property. A lot have seen him, she said. Not sure who that was. There were different occasions where I've had people over at the house and say, there's somebody at the door. It's the farmer. She and Pamela said that they hope the paranormal team will return to their homes to further investigate those entities. By the time they left and the whole thing is over, I was a believer, Pamela said. They proved to me that there are things we don't know about and are on the other side, and they reach out once in a while, and they aren't bad. I was a non-believer, but I'm not anymore. Since a visit by the Eastern Connecticut Paranormal Society, Pamela said, Ada has said that Heather is still visiting them. Heather plays and does stuff with my daughter, Trinity, Ada said. In the beginning, we thought it was an imaginary friend. Chris said she was playing with Heather. There's also times when quiet, times when you're alone, Pamela said. I would talk to her, tell her things, hope that she's okay. It's a feeling. I can feel her. I can feel the warm love. Pamela said that knowing Heather is around helps her own spiritual life. I don't have a fear of dying because I feel like I will be with her and we'll be together again and we'll be happy, she said. Very cool. I do think it's kind of weird, though, that they're like, we have a specialist who looks into this and digs up history so they can debunk the garbage. And we came across a ghost named Josiah who died by falling on a hay hook, but there's no proof that he ever existed. But we know he's there.
Yeah,
that seems a little counterintuitive to what they were just trying to sell you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little confusing.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, Halloween's almost here. Thanksgiving to follow. Christmas right around the corner. Maybe you're looking for the perfect gift. How about getting your hands on my package? It's the gift that keeps on giving, Tim.
That's what I hear, yeah.
Yeah. My package has got an autographed copy of my book, The Other Side. It also has an autographed Holzer Files card, and you'll get a darkness radio decal you can proudly display on your laptops, your com- your cars, your motorcycles, Tim, maybe even on your spouse's back. I don't care where you put it. It's your damn decal. Do with it as you will. It is a $50 value. You can get it for $40 plus the shipping and handling. If you're interested, just email me. I want Dave's package at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. Email me. We will invoice you, get that out, and I will sign those and ship them out immediately. So if you're interested, again, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I want Dave's package, and we'll get it shipped out and billed to you immediately. Thank you all for tuning in and spending some time here with us. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking fairies and shadow people and monsters and ghost stories, all live on tape from the Jericho Cruise right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.